Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. Well, today's cutting-edge discoveries in cognitive science and neuroanatomy reveal the truth about love. What it is, what sparks it, what kills it, what makes it last. My second guest today is an expert on this subject. She says we can learn how to harness the power to instantly spark and create a lifetime of chemistry with the man or woman of your choice. She talks about sparking it fast and making it last. And we'll also talk about how you walk into a room affects all of your relationships. So we'll be joined by her about 12:40. But first, we're going to talk about love in a different context. We're talking with someone whose work I recently became familiar with. I was flicking through TV and saw this documentary film and thought, well, we'll give it a try. And I have to tell you, that film is now on my list of favorites. Jill Andresovic is a writer, director, and producer who began her career 13 years ago in Portland, producing award-winning campaigns for Nike. Between 2006 and 2008, Andresovic created over 40 short documentaries for Cadillac, starring William H. Macy, Jay Leno, and other big-name celebrities. And in 2002, Boards Magazine named her one of the top freelance agency producers in the U.S. Her work has also been honored by the Wall Street Journal and Time Magazine. She's joining us today to talk about her debut into feature films with Love, Etc. Jill Andresovic, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vicki. Nice to be here.
Very pleased to have you here. I want to start off with a little bit of your background so that listeners know a little bit more about you, and then we'll talk some more about the film and filmmaking in general. So you are a writer, director, producer. You said when we were going backward and forward in email that you're basically a maker. You're always writing, creating, shooting. You live in New York City, you love it, and you just keep making things. So talk to us a little bit about what you mean by making things and how that goes for you.
Well, I think living in New York City definitely provides a certain advantage, at least for me artistically, because there's always so much happening, and just walking out on the street or just stepping into the subway, it can be very inspirational, and the people that you meet or intersect with in the most unexpected places can provide some very interesting thoughts, and it's just generally entertaining to be in the city. So you're constantly surrounded by art and literature and culture and parks if you get to Central Park. But it's just an inspirational place. And I've lived in LA, I've lived in Portland, I've lived in San Francisco, and I prefer New York the most, even though it's not necessarily the easiest city to be in. It's certainly, for me, artistically and creatively, the most inspirational.
I can definitely see that because, you know, larger cities like L.A., people go everywhere in their cars, but you've got that human interconnection there. And especially if you're a people watcher, there's plenty to watch in New York City for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially on the subways, there's always something fascinating. And I love this idea of being below ground at ground level and then above ground in some sort of skyscraper. So you really see the world from all three perspectives, you know, all the time, because you're traversing the city, you know, underground often. And I just recently, I used to live downtown below 14th Street, and I recently moved to Harlem, which is actually a really cool place. It's totally popping. It's crazy. And I lived in Brooklyn way before. Like, I lived in Brooklyn right before it, like, completely happened. But right now, Harlem is happening in a way that's very fascinating. I mean, I've been watching my neighborhood change in the last 6 months in a way that I would, it reminds me of Brooklyn. But taking the subway every day, you just have a connection to the city that's very, authentic and very diverse. And again, there's something really interesting about being in three different places, you know, above ground, below ground, and high up.
Right.
Which also relates to the film, too, because when I did this film, Love, Etc., I really wanted to capture, you know, all these different elements of New York City, which is a city that I was, you know, adopted as my home city. It's not my hometown, per se, because I grew up in Oregon, in Portland, not so far from Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to incorporate the backdrop of New York City. How could you not in any film that you make there,
of course,
as one of the characters?
Yeah, it most definitely is a character of the film. So let's sort of talk a little bit about how you got into filmmaking in the first place. You worked with commercial agencies. You were producing commercial videos for Nike, for Cadillac. How did you make the transition from that to your debut on this feature?
Well, I grew up in Portland, so I started at Wieden & Kennedy, which is an agency that does a lot of amazing, incredible work, and I think they were just named Agency of the Year this year.
Mm-hmm.
They're phenomenal, and it was very much my creative formation, because you're only as good as the last thing you did. That was one of the things that was a mindset among everyone that I was around at the time. I imagine it's still the same.
That is very true, yes.
So keeping that in mind, you might have done something incredible 3 months ago, but what'd you do last month?
Right.
Because that's really what matters. And so that sort of thought process, makes you really focus on every single project as if it has to be the most amazing thing that you do. And there's a certain creative bar that was set. And there was also a certain kind of expectation of being aware of, what's happening culturally, like what's interesting, in music, what's interesting in film, and paying attention to certain visuals. And we really, when I was there, we also did a lot of documentary work, maybe even before it was like the everything hipness to do it. But there was always an authenticity in the work that Wieden does for Nike and other clients. And I think certainly that had a tremendous influence on me. I was really fortunate to be around some top directors, some top, creative thinkers, whether they were filmmakers or creative directors or art directors or, truthfully, there's some account executives that are quite kick-ass creative that people might not recognize.
Yeah. But no matter what their role is, I mean, they have outside interests anyway. So, I mean, most of the people I've worked with in creative agencies are also into, writing fiction or producing fiction films, etc.
Totally. And I think that, you learn a certain kind of creative process and a discipline of how to create work. And, artistically, I think you're an artist when you're afraid to send something out in the world and you're like, they're going to hate it.
Yeah.
Are they going to like it? But the reality is that if you make something, you just have to put it out there and see how people respond and let it have its own life. And then you go on to make the next thing. And I think that's something that I've really learned over time is that, you need to keep making work. I mean, if you want to create something, you don't want to just stew over it and dream on it forever. Actually, execute it. Just pick something that you can do, even if it's just writing a 10-page short story and complete it. And if it's terrible, like, put it aside and move on. And you learn from that. And you just keep building on what you make. And I think that process, that act of making, it's like a muscle. Like if you cook a lot, you get better. I'm not like I'm a great cook. But, when I do cook more often, I certainly am better.
Right, right. And it's interesting what you say about, you're an artist when you're afraid to put your work out, because I watched an interesting program on Oscar Hammerstein last night. I grew up with that music because my mother loved all of his music. And so one of the things that he said, one of his biggest hits, I think it was Carousel or Showboat. It must have been Carousel, I think. And he was walking with his wife before it came out, and he was scared to death that people would hate it.
Yep.
And look how long that's been around.
Absolutely. And, sometimes that's true. It's very accurate. But I think that, as an artistically, as you, start to get more accolades and people are starting to love what you do, then certainly, you're just like, it just becomes, more routine and it's easier. Like, I'm sure J.J. Abrams doesn't think so much about doing Star Wars. Maybe he's a little nervous, but not so much after having, done so much successful television and film work. But I think the act of making requires a certain sense of courage, and I think courage is defined by doing something that you're afraid of doing and doing it anyway.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Yes, yes. And I'm sure you must be very proud. This film has won accolades. I mean, I didn't read them all out. The list is extensive of the accolades that this film has won. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to ask you to describe the film in your own words to our listeners. Then we'll talk about some of the characters in there, because as everybody knows, we need good characters in fiction films, but you also need great characters in documentary film.
Definitely.
My guest is Jill Andresovic. Her film is called, she's the director of Love, Etc. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, wouldn't you like to know what your dream means before you commit on Valentine's Day? The Dream Detective joins Vicky to analyze your romantic dreams and answer your toughest dream questions. Tune in Monday at noon Pacific right here on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for details and more than 200 archived podcasts.
But in your dreams, whatever they be, dream a little dream of me.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
You're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
It takes a lot to love you.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And the general topic of our show today is love. We're looking at it from a couple of different perspectives. In this segment, we're looking at it with director Jill Andresovic. She's the director of Love, Etc., which, as I said at the top of the hour, is now on my list of favorite documentary films. I looked up love in the dictionary, and it said a profoundly tender, passionate affection for another person. But we know there are many aspects to this, and love, like anything else in life, is a journey. And Jill is here today sharing this with us. So Jill, I'm going to ask you if you would talk a little bit about the film in your own words. You know, we've got five main couples in here, or five characters in here, if you want, but six is New York City. So why don't we start with how this began? Because that in itself is an interesting story.
Sure. The executive producer is Jonathan Tisch. I just did a television show with him, a project, and we were on set, and he told me he'd just gotten married a second time, and he was madly in love, still is, with his wife. And they had gone to the City Hall Wedding Bureau to get their marriage license. And, of course, I'm sure Jonathan, because he knows a lot of people in New York, could have just had someone pick up his marriage certificate. But for whatever reason, he and his wife decided to pick it up in person. And they stood in line and waited in line. And they were standing in this room. And the room was small, typical New York, crowded. and busy and filled with a number of different people from different places in the world, you know, different speaking different languages, different ages, and they were all there for a transaction about love. And that's really the genesis of the film, because he was very inspired by this idea of, you know, this force that brings people together, and what brings people together set against the backdrop of New York, which is the most ethnically diverse city, one of the most ethnically diverse cities in the world. And so we decided to examine love's journey, you know, across different boroughs, different socioeconomic conditions, situations, different lifestyle choices, and, you know, and just, and that was the genesis of the movie.
Now, before you start the movie, you know, you wrote a statement, you wrote the director's statement. The questions were, is love's journey the same across different socioeconomic conditions, cultures, and age groups? And what does real love look like? Not Hollywood style, but everyday real life. So where did you start with making the film? Did you start looking for your characters first?
We did, there's a couple different things. One is, there was this idea of what does real love look like, not Hollywood love, not, yeah, like scripted television or, you know, romance novels. So we wanted to examine love in various forms. And one thing about love is that it's something that crosses time. So whether you live in the 18th century or now, if you're an adult, you're going to be in one of the following stages. You're either going to be looking for love, finding love, keeping love, losing love, starting over again, or ignoring it. And those are timeless. It doesn't matter what culture, what language, what country, you know, and what year you were born. It's
right.
Like that is a common journey. So examining those different capsules of love was something that we did end up exploring. And we, ironically, not intentionally necessarily, we tried to, but we weren't sure who would end up making the film, because we shot more than five stories that ended up in the movie. But we really did represent, you know, most of those states of being, states of love.
Right. And I don't know if this is a common thing, but, you know, for me, Albert and Marion, Albert was 79, Marion 89. She married a younger man.
she was the original cougar.
She was the original cougar.
Yeah.
And they were married for 48 years. And he said, well, he says this in the trailer, 48 years felt like 48 minutes, felt like 48 seconds. They were just my favorites. They were adorable.
Yeah, they were like right out of a Woody Allen film for me. It's just, but you know, they're so authentic. They were madly in love. And you know what's funny is Albert told me after he saw the movie, he's like, my wife is old. I never knew my wife was old.
I hope he included himself in that too.
I know he should be including himself in that, but you know, he looks in the mirror every day. But
right,
I don't know.
Right.
I think he froze in time.
Right,
Marion.
Right. And they were just such an endearing couple. They were musicians still waiting for their hit song at the age of 79 and 89. I mean, you can't, you know, hold on to that hope at that age. And this is, I think, an important thing for everyone to hold on to hope. And but it was really endearing to see.
Yeah, they were definitely entertaining. They were truly, deeply, madly in love. It was pretty amazing. I mean, it doesn't matter. It was interesting because what they have as a couple and is something that people aspire to. And it's, you know, New York is so much about, you know, what shoes you're wearing or, you know, what party you're going to or, you know, what latest event you went to, whatever. I mean, there's a lot of that because it's just that is part of New York. Not all of it, but there's certainly that aspect. And, you know, Albert and Marion were, you know, very humble in their the way that they lived and very simple, but they had a beautiful life together.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the exterior things that matter so much really in the end. It's about this connection that they had to one another, and they really were rich in their love with each other in a way that most people may not ever be.
Right. As a director, did you have a favorite storyline?
Depending on my mood.
Depending on your mood.
Yeah. I think that what's cool about the film is, you know, depending on where you're at, you know, you could watch the movie like today and feel one way, and then maybe a year from now, something else is happening in your life. You might relate to a different story in a different way because it's more relevant to your life at the time. And I think that, you know, there's just different aspects of what people are going through, and there's that common through line of what, you know, struggle and longing and desire and failure and success all mixed into one that makes it interesting. And of course, you know, there's sadness, which, and there's also humor, which kind of goes with sadness, I guess, sometimes. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's an interesting adventure. So I don't have a favorite, no.
Mm. You know, what I found, I think a good film always makes you change your perspective a little or opens your eyes to something. You know, we've often heard of women chasing the biological clock. And, you know, if they have no partner in sight, they have no husband in sight, they decide, well, I'll just have a child by myself. And I don't know about, you know, people listening, but I've never really thought about, you know, guys in that situation. And you have Scott, of course, in there, who's 52, single, he's gay, and he doesn't, you know, have his partner, but he desperately wants to be a dad.
Yeah, Scott was a fascinating story to follow. I mean, he's extraordinarily successful. He's a very prolific theater director and very well considered, and he also does a lot of television. And he's a lovely human and very funny, very authentic, very down-to-earth, and his clock was ticking. And of course, his biological clock is probably slightly different than a woman's. However, he really does, in a lot of ways, represent a single woman's struggle who wants to have kids and is concerned about timing. And he said, if I didn't do it now, I wouldn't do it. So he made a plan,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
It was, it was really remarkable to watch him go through his journey. And he's someone who has all the trappings of success, which is, you know, he's got all the fabulous friends and he has a great home and he lives in New York, he lives in LA, he travels and this and that, but he really was missing this thing that he really wanted to express himself through having children and raising children. And he also, you know, he wanted to have a partner and he did have different partners, but none of the partners were right. So he just decided to carve out this journey by himself, and was totally afraid, for real, and he says this in the movie, that he'll never meet someone again, because who wants to meet someone who has kids, you know what I mean?
Right.
And infants.
Right.
Which he was, of course, you know, incorrect, but that's, you know, he
that's
know, rightfully
he feels.
So
yeah.
Afraid.
Yeah, very successful, as you said, in his career, and just couldn't, you know, as many people, it's elusive. You sometimes wonder if you can have it all, but...
Mm-hmm.
And another of my favorites was Gabriel, the boy from Brazil. I fell in love with him too. His first love. I don't know if this was him in general, and he came across as very authentic. But I thought he had the most wonderful outlook on life.
Yeah, he's amazing. He was like really, he shocked me at the end of the film. He talks about building life brick by brick, and it's not about, you know, whether the girl's pretty or whether she's this or she's that, but like really making a conscious choice to partner with somebody and create your life brick by brick. And it was mind bending. And the time he told us that, or I was interviewing him, I think he was 18, maybe 19. And, you know, it's just very powerful, consideration and thought, and actually extraordinarily accurate. And he's certainly, thinking ahead, because there's a lot of truth to that in many things, not just personal relationships and business and life and friendships. But yeah, he's a really lovely, smart, interesting human, and had his own struggle. I mean, I'm sure he was absolutely heartbroken. But of course, this happens when people finish high school and then college happens.
Yes, yeah. We're talking with Jill Andrasevic. She's the director of Love, Etc. And Jill, you've said that you're a great fan of Woody Allen. I read that you're a fan of Nora Ephron. Who else has inspired you as the director?
Well, I love Albert Maysles. And I actually had the chance to meet him in November, because he has a film institute in Harlem. And ironically, I was just at his cinema this Saturday. He did something, made something for Surf Films. But when I met him in November, he showed a clip from Give Me Shelter, but it was an outtake with Mick Jagger, and it was young Mick Jagger. And his approach and his sensibility is just brilliant. And of course, you know, Grey Gardens is one of my all-time favorite documentaries, because he really becomes friends with his subjects, and then the way that they film is really very intimate and smart, and I really, really admire him. And then actually meeting him in person and hearing him speak was mind-bending, because his sense of connectivity is, you know, to the human soul and mind is really next level. So as he's my favorite documentarian.
I'm going to check him out because I don't know too much about him.
You have to watch Grey Gardens. It's genius. Mm. They made a film out of it. They made a scripted feature out of it on TV.
Okay.
But the documentary is next level.
Okay. Going to check that out. You said in the director's statement that you learned that love couldn't be scripted, managed, or controlled. Shooting was a crapshoot for you every day. So tell us how you managed that.
Well, you know, you want, on one level, you know, you want things to happen with your stories because you're like, it's like going fishing. Doing documentary filmmaking is a bit like going fishing because you're waiting for things to happen. I mean, we made decisions about storylines. For example, every single storyline we chose had a natural beginning, middle, and end, like the birth of a child, before the birth, you know, the birth, after the birth, a love affair at high school, you know, right before high school ends, and then college starts and what happens. But at the same time, it's like you can't predict what is going to happen in someone's life. You can't, you know, it's not a reality TV show. You know, we weren't doing nothing was scripted. And it was ironic because we edited it in a way that I think people might have, some people thought it was scripted, which sort of blew me away. And I take that as sort of a backhanded compliment because it certainly wasn't. I wish they would have gone through the 600 hours of footage. But
I was going to ask you how many hours of footage you had.
Exactly. Why didn't you just call my editor before you wrote that? But whatever. And that's also about being an artist, just like, you know, moving forward. But the thing is that the not knowing what was going to happen or when it was going to happen was a bit interesting. And then, you know, then trying to, you know, take that footage and construct something out of that, you know, in alignment with where you are before is interesting. Because there are really three films. There's the film you have in your head, there's the film that you shoot, and there's the film that you cut. And the film that you have in your head somewhat resembles the film that you cut. But the film that you shoot, when you're shooting, like, it's like for me, I go into this space, this headspace, and I love shooting. It's so much fun. And you know, you have things that you remember and things that are compelling and stick with you. And sometimes you're correct. Sometimes the things that are super compelling to you on set are equally compelling in the edit. And sometimes things that you see, things that occur that are unearthed in the edit are things that you wouldn't have necessarily thought would be really that striking, and then they become striking. So it's just an interesting process, and that's part of the documentary filmmaking process. And it's a bit of a discovery. It's a bit of a, you know, hunting and searching. It's a bit of fishing when you're shooting verite.
Right. So, and that means you're just following people around, for those who aren't familiar with that term. You're following them around, just capturing their natural, whatever's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned that there's likely going to be a scripted version of this. So talk to us a little bit about that.
So we have captured the attention of a network studio, and we are currently in the process of developing a scripted television version of this. So whether or not that'll be greenlit ultimately is, you know, uncertain. However, we're, you know, in development. And if you know about entertainment, anyone out there, that you know that it can be glacial or it can be, you know, incredibly fast. So I'm uncertain as to how it'll all unfold, but I think it's, you know, a really fun assignment to and opportunity to have this possibility. And I think that it would be really interesting to bring some of the thoughts and concepts of, you know, this sort of, you know, love across time and generations to the smaller screen, meaning television, in a smart, authentic, well-written way. So if that happens, that would be incredible.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the couples that I thought the writing was on the wall with them right from the get-go was the Indian couple. It was kind of sad. And maybe I saw it because I'm older now and I kind of saw myself in a similar situation, you know, a million years ago. But,
well, you know, it's interesting. They just had a baby.
They did.
Mm-hmm. And that they're actually going to make it. And I think there's real love there between them. I think
yes.
That there's lots of different struggles that people go through, and that I think that love is a choice. I think there are so many different people that you could fall in love with and really, you know, where are you going to be? Like, oh, I made the decision to move to San Francisco. No, I lived in L.A. No, I'm actually going to move to London. Well, I'm going to stay in London, and then in London I'm going to meet. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you don't,
yeah.
Or I'm in Seattle, and I'm, you know, I'm taking a vacation to XYZ, and then I'm going to end up meeting someone who's, you know, then you connect. And I think that it's all very unpredictable and exciting and kind of fun.
It's a journey.
It's definitely a journey. So you never really know where it's going to all end up. But I think that that unexpected connection and unexpected, you know, where people end up, and then also like making choices. Like if you meet, like, let's say there are 100 people that you could fall in love with on the planet, like really fall in love with, and you happen to intersect with one of them, that's incredible. But then maybe there's a problem, and you choose to either overcome it or not,
mm-hmm.
and maybe it's insurmountable. But if you can overcome it, then you're making a choice. You're making a choice to stay as opposed to moving on. And I think that a lot of relationships that I've seen, people make choices to stay. They make choices to work it out. And again, it doesn't mean that all things can work out, because some things are just not meant to work out. And my personal philosophy is that, you know, if you're in a relationship and you're not sure, you know, make sure, and you really love that person, you know, I would, you know, try to, you know, go the distance before you walk away, because, you know, it's like time moves so quickly, and then once you propel apart, then you may or may not come back together. So at least
right.
you want to walk away knowing that you've done everything you can to
right.
be in it.
Right.
But I think that back to the Indian couple, it's interesting because they're really, you know, they stayed together in the end, and they're building a successful, happy life together. And who knows? Because it's really, when it comes to love, it really comes down to what it is between two people. I love how everybody tries to analyze and break down and give advice to two different people that are in a relationship, when at
mm-hmm.
the end of the day, honestly, it's between them.
Absolutely. That's why I never give advice on relationships
to friends. I might give a point of view, but I say, hey, it's really
yeah.
up to you, and you know.
Yeah. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, if people do genuinely love one another and they put the kind of energy into their relationship that they'd put into escaping the relationship, they'd have the best relationship.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's interesting because I think we have, someone said to me that you should protect your emotional state, your emotional being, as much as you do your physical being.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really fascinating, because the question, I think the biggest question for me, for someone in uncertain, is like, you know, is your emotional being in a good space? Because if it's not, then you have to look at that, because that also is like we can throw emotional daggers at each other, and it can be equally as harmful as something physical.
Right.
And I think that people have to, like, you know, examine all these different things. But, you know, human beings by nature are so complex. I heard you're going to talk to someone about the neurology of love, which is very fascinating, I think.
Yes, most definitely. And so we're almost at the end of our segment right now. So tell me quickly what's next for you. This Love, Etc. is a fascinating film, and it stirs up all of these questions that we've kind of talked about together, and many, many more. So I highly recommend it as good watching. But what's next for you, Jill?
Well, I'm working, you know, we're working on the TV show, which is just development right now. I've got another documentary project that I've been working on. We're about to release something probably in the next number of weeks on YouTube. I just did a 5-minute short for a prince of India. His name is Prince Manvendra Singh Gohil. He's been on Oprah twice. He's the first openly gay royal in the world, certainly
right.
not the only gay royal in the world, but first openly gay royal. And I met some of his people that are closest to him in the United States because of the Love, Etc., actually, and they asked me to work with him, so I did. And we're developing a longer format piece on his life, but he's a fascinating, fascinating person. You could only imagine if he, you know, was on Oprah twice, his story is ridiculous.
Right.
But
right.
I really like this piece we made for him. And then I've got, you know, a number of other projects, which I won't go at length into, but it's just really it's the act of making. I think it's important to make things. So I just, you know, I make the things that inspire me.
Yeah. And give me a website where people can find out more about the film, more about you.
Love, Etc., the movie.com is everything about Love, Etc. And currently my website is Alchemy Media Lab, alchemymedialab.com.
Okay, Jill Andrusevic. No, I'm going to say your name right this time. Okay.
Andrusevic.
I told you once you get something in your head, it's hard to get
it out. You know what, though? Actually, I think, you know, it used to be Andrusevic, so I'll just, like, totally confuse you. But really, it's Andrusevic. All good.
Jill Andrusevic, director and producer of Love, Etc., fabulous movie. Thank you so much for being with us. You're a delight.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great rest of the day.
Thanks.
Ciao.
And please do stay with us. We will be right back with my next guest, who says, spark it fast and make it last. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
I may not always love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to BioClean, we cover the world of animals. This week, February 10th, it's a diet and nutrition show. We'll be talking all about raw and home-cooked diets for our dog and cat friends. New owner of the Natural Pet Pantry, Randy Astrom, will be joining me in the studio. There's lots of new stuff to learn about feeding raw food, and you may just find out it's a lot more affordable and convenient than you think. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, wouldn't you like to know what your dream means before you commit on Valentine's Day? The Dream Detective joins Vicky to analyze your romantic dreams and answer your toughest dream questions. Tune in Monday at noon Pacific right here on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for details and more than 200 archived podcasts.
But in your dreams, whatever they be, dream a little dream of me.
Lisa, it's Janet.
What's wrong?
It's the bridesmaids' dresses for Lindsay's wedding.
Oh, no. Tell me they're not fuchsia.
They're not fuchsia.
They're chiffon? I specifically said no chiffon. I mean,
they're not chiffon.
Then what?
They're made out of old yellow pages.
Excuse me?
Uh-huh. Something about recycling and good karma on her wedding day.
Great. I'm not going to know whether a guy's checking me out or just looking for the number of a good mechanic.
Very funny.
There's a better way to recycle your outdated Dex phone books. Call 1-877-2-GET-DEX or log on to DexKnows.com to find out how.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair has a new Facebook page, so you can see what's happening on our show and what we're up to between shows. Like us on Facebook and look out for upcoming contest drawings.
Want to hear something different from talk radio? The choice is clear. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. We have a great guest for you to follow, the director of Love, Etc. Leah Lowndes has devoted her professional life to helping people become more effective communicators in business, social, and romantic relationships. She's basically an expert in the fields of human behavior and interpersonal relationships. For the past 20 years, in addition to speaking, she's authored 10 books. They include How to Talk to Anyone, How to Instantly Connect with Anyone, Goodbye to Shy, love that one, How to Be a People Magnet, and How to Make Anyone Fall in Love with You. And her latest book was just released in January, and it's called 75 Ways to Spark It Fast and Make It Last, How to Create Chemistry with Anyone. Leah Lowndes, welcome to the show.
I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, that's a pretty big statement there. 75 ways to spark it fast and make it last, and how to create chemistry with anyone. Do you mean anyone?
No, I believe that my publisher was the one who wanted that title. I wanted How to Create Chemistry with Someone. However, as I was writing the book, I realized that there are some pretty generic things that you can do. And if someone is at all attracted to you, there are ways that you can turn that attraction into a spark. A spark is that, it's actually neurochemistry. It's the neurotransmitters in our brain that are signaling other neurons that this is exciting. And it creates a chemical called dopamine. And when dopamine flows into the pleasure center of your brain, it's actually the nucleus caudate, a big spark comes. It's a thrill. And this is the thing that I tried to find out if you could create with someone. And I found that, yes, there are certain ways to do that.
Oh, well, interesting. Well, we're going to find out more about that. Let's just hear a little bit about your background first, because I read that you were so shy at one point that this is how you came into this kind of work. You decided you were only going to work where you had to work with people to force yourself out there. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Surely. I was teaching English when I first graduated from college, and I found myself unable to speak with anyone over the age of 14 years old. And I decided at that point, after 6 years, to leave teaching and just jump into situations where I would always be communicating with people. And it's been a lifelong fascination, the struggle going from shy to actually being totally comfortable being on stage in front of thousands of people. And I've broken it down into techniques, which I wrote about primarily in How to Talk to Anyone. And then, as so many of us, I have always been fascinated by love. And of all the emotions in the world, I cannot believe that up until now, we have known so little about what creates the sentiment of love. And now, thanks to PET scans, CAT scans, fMRI machines, scientists, neurologists have been able to explore what goes on in the human brain when we feel not only that spark, but what is going on when we feel long-term love for someone. And once you know what it is, that gives you a leg up on creating it.
Right. It is quite fascinating. And I've watched several science shows on, you know, how the brain lights up when certain things are shown to participants. And sometimes I don't want to watch it because I think, oh, I don't fit in that category.
Of course we do. We all do.
But,
we all have brains.
But sometimes all it takes is that initial spark. And your work really is about creating that spark and then telling us how to make that spark last, because that's the hard bit.
Well, that's the most important bit. Yes, you can create sparks. I always say that you should not use the golden rule when trying to create a spark with someone. Use the platinum rule, which is, it's not do unto others as you would have them do unto you, but do unto others as they would like done into them. So it's very different techniques for a man and for a woman.
Right. So, you know, one of the things I loved your website starts with, are you the kind of person who walks into a room and says, well, here I am? Or are you the person who walks into a room and goes, ah, there you are? And that, I mean, I was thinking about all the people I know who fit into those two categories.
Yeah.
You know, many people fit in between, but I was thinking about certain people who fit into those two categories and very different in relationships.
Very much so. You need to be focused on the other person, and especially in creating love. The first step is to create the spark, and the basis of that is, as I said, dopamine, the chemical, which is exciting. So on a first date, you should do something that is maybe even a little scary or something that is very emotionally moving. Perhaps you love good music, so a concert, or even just a little bit of a frightening movie, something to get the dopamine flowing. And then through a process called transference, you transfer the excitement that you're feeling about the activity to the person that you're with. But that's right. Just for starters. Then you want to get another chemical flowing, which is the bonding chemical called oxytocin. So after, during this exciting activity, wind down with a nice quiet dinner for two in a romantic setting where you both look a lot better in candlelight and low lighting.
Now, oxytocin is the chemical that mothers give off when they give birth, right? They have between them and their baby. But how do you get men to release this bonding chemical?
Well, there are several ways. One is through non-sexual touching, having your hand on his shoulder while you're sleeping, sitting close to him on the couch, not sexually, but just the bonding. There's something magic about human touch, and that very much helps it. There's also something that I think men will enjoy hearing. A man interprets love from his wife, from his woman, as sex, her willingness to give sex. So if you give him a lot of quickies, it will actually increase the bonding chemical with him. But, of course, turnabout is fair foreplay. And when there's time, absolutely, we women need it slow, being caressed all over. But that's one way to keep the passion alive, but it can never be kept to the extent that it was at the beginning, because we are programmed by Mother Nature that the dopamine will fade after about 18 months to 2 years, that passionate, have to have sex with you all the time feeling.
Wow, that's quick. That's quick, yeah. So how do we keep this going? big, humongous question. But, I mean, you give lots of tips in your books. But people do get into a rut. Things change once they become committed, because oftentimes they'll get married, have a home together, they've got jobs, they start raising families. And that, you know, I hear it all the time from friends. There's no time. There's no time for us.
Precisely. And I know one of the things that you really have to do to keep a marriage exciting is to do exciting things together. That keeps that same chemical going that you had on your first dates when everything was very exciting. So continuing to do fun things together. If you don't spend some people say, well, it's too expensive. Well, you'll spend a lot more on marriage counseling or divorces later on than you will on babysitters now or restaurants out. So definitely keep doing fun things together. Another is laughter. Try to bring laughter into the relationship. Now, laughter does not have to be anything funny. When friends get together, there have been studies on what it is they're laughing about, and it's usually not about anything specific. It's just the joy of being together. And your partner will, of course, feel that you are the one who is giving them that joy when there's a lot of laughter in the relationship.
Right. I think there's a lot of intimacy in laughter. If you can just laugh at nothing with people. I think with my brother and my sister, when I connect with them, people say, what are you laughing at? And we're like, we don't know.
Right. It's just a feeling.
Right. So there can be a lot of intimacy in that. And certainly humor's laughter is very important to me. And I think most people. One of the things you talk about in the book is, let me just find the title here. It's How to Create Spark Chemistry Online, because so many people, I think I read the other day that they said about 60% of relationships now start online, which I found hard to believe, but I guess there's a lot of it going on.
Well, it's true, and it's, of course, hard to create a spark online, but what you can do is the studies have shown that if a woman is wearing red, she has a higher response rate than when she's not wearing red. So in your main profile picture, red is an excellent color to wear. Also, in a profile picture, a woman should show not more than four photographs, but at least three or four where she shows different parts of her body. It should not be sexy, but it should show her figure to a certain extent, maybe a seated shot that shows her legs. So that any man who's a leg man, say, would be able to find something that he's attracted to.
Okay. I'm guessing my producer's a leg man. He just had a big grin on his face then when you said that.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And when a man must be very careful, because whatever is in the background of his particular picture is going to be noticed by the woman. Men primarily look at the woman by herself. The woman looks at what's in the background. Is it a truck, a motorcycle, a Subaru, a Mercedes? She will make judgments on that. And as far as a man's face in his picture, he should show character in his face. The typically good-looking man is not so much what a woman is after as someone who looks like they are really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And in writing your profile, you should write things that you realize that people will be reading between the lines, especially women will be reading between the lines.
Interesting.
And when you write to someone, don't keep saying I and selling yourself. Talk about what you found fascinating in the other person's profile.
Now, you talk with a lot of people I know. There's been a recent scandal lately, and I do not remember his name, but some football player who was dating somebody online for, I think, 8 months. There was the movie, and it turned out to be a guy, unbeknownst to him. Mm-hmm. There was a movie called Catfish, where the lead in that, it was a non-fiction film. I won't call it documentary, but it was a non-fiction film where he fell in love with a woman online for 10 months, and then it turned out to be a totally different woman, totally different age group, family situation, everything. And what surprised me was how long they talked with these people online before they met, if they ever did meet. And, you know, and then to go find that you think you've been talking to a woman and you've been talking to a man or vice versa is a huge shock. So what kind of advice do you give people to avoid those situations, and how long should they talk with somebody online before they actually meet?
I think that they should try to meet as soon as possible once they've determined that the man is not a serial killer or that the woman is not really a man, because that magic spark only happens when you're meeting someone. And the one bad thing about online dating is that we read so much of our desires and our fantasies into what the other person says. We read between the lines things that the other person really didn't write between the lines at all.
Right. Right. I don't understand it. It wouldn't work for me because I'm very visual, so it just wouldn't work for me. But there's a whole TV series on that Catfish, bounced off that Catfish movie now. And people every week are exposing the people that they thought they were in love with to be something entirely different. It's quite shocking.
Of course, you can't really fall in love with someone online because there's so much involved in love. But you can become infatuated. You can have that first kick, but you can't keep it going.
Yeah. Well, we've got Valentine's Day coming up. What if we're going on a first date with somebody we're really interested in? How do we spark that chemistry on our first date to make sure we get a second date?
Try to figure out what it is that the other person is most excited about, what they most enjoy doing. A physical activity is good. If you love ballet or beautiful music, whatever the other person's passion is, do that, because once again, you want to get that spark going in their brain, and they will indeed anchor you to that.
Okay.
And then afterward, you want to have quiet time, especially for women, because we communicate by talking with each other. So you want to have good communication with the woman. So the two-part date is perfect for the Valentine's Day.
Okay. And so I wrote down earlier when we were talking earlier, you were talking about transference to get that dopamine going.
Yes.
And then follow it up with the oxytocin so that we bond.
Very much so. And there are other bonding chemicals. Vasopressin is a chemical that we both have, but men, especially when they're holding a newborn infant, a mother should give the newborn infant to the father often to hold, because a chemical of protection, feeling of protection, is more apt to happen then.
Okay. Okay, awesome. Well, interesting book, 75 Ways to Spark It Fast and Make It Last. If you're looking for love or you want to get it going again, if you're in a long-term relationship, this is a good book for you. Lille Lance is my guest. And Lille, very quickly, where can people find you?
My website is greatcommunicating.com. It's one word, great communicating. And also the book is How to Create Chemistry with Anyone is the main title. And then 75 Ways to Spark It Fast and Make It Last
okay.
is the subtitle.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you being with us today, Lille Lowndes. And we will be back with you next week with an all-live new show. Until then, live well, live strong. Thanks for spending this hour with us. You can find me at conversationslive.net.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.